Hello and welcome to a response of a day for the 10th day of Iyar. My name is Gideon Rothstein. We thank the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hochhauser for putting these shiurim online and making them available to you. And for the 10th of Iyar, we're going to see two responsa of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which are about the same topic. They were just the second of the responsa is the one that was written for the 10th of Iyar, and it bases itself on the first of them. And it's an example of a kind of response, and we don't all that often see together. We see it sometimes because I think it's an important part of the response literature as well, where the question isn't a specific halachic issue that came up, a specific incident that occurred, and the person asking wants to know what to do about it. It's a more of a discussion of a broad set of halachic ideas, which will one day, or could one day, come up in actual life, you know, in an actual example, but it's an example of a meshiv. Just had an interesting conversation in writing with a fellow Torah scholar and wanted to share it with the readers of his shvarim, of his book. So in Shut Igrot Moshe, in the response of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Igrot Moshe, Yoredeya, the first volume of Yoredeya, Chedek Aleph, Simon Kufla, Man Aleph, response number 131. Now, it's dated, this one is dated the 8th of Adar, of Adar Rishon, of Tufresh Pei Zion. Tufresh Pei Zion was 1927. The second tshuva is going to be the 10th of Iyar of that same year, so it'll be about 3 months later. But 1927, Moshe Feinstein is a 32-year-old man. So he's a young man. He's living in Luban. He's a young man living, you know, out there in, you know, Eastern Europe, I think Russia, but and not yet coming to America. And he doesn't publish a book of responses. As far as I've ever been able to tell, the first volume of Igrot Moshe comes out in 1950 when he's a 55-year-old man. So he's certainly a well-qualified Torah scholar by this point, you know, just one day turn into Rav Moshe Feinstein. But he's somebody who, I think, is sort of locally known, but he's not a world-renowned respondent. He's talking to a friend, as it were. He's having a correspondence. When he starts publishing his tshuvot, he includes these as well, which is also a reminder that, to me, and I think it's interesting to think about, that even as a young man, Rav Moshe Feinstein is already keeping his correspondence, meaning it feels like he has an intention to publish it one day from the time he's very young, or else he's just a guy who wrote down everything he learned and spoke about with people, and then one day got the idea that he was going to start publishing it. But I don't think that's what it is. I think it sort of feels like he had this sense that he was going to be this guy who's going to be writing these responses and is keeping all of these correspondences of his. So the topic at hand is a responsum of the Rush. The Rush and responsum in Klal Chet Ted Zion, which is in the way he set up his response to the Rush, he has Klalim and then specifics, and you'd have to talk about that another time as to why he decided to organize it that way. But the topic that comes up is Benishba Lifroa Bima'ot Dafka. Let's say I borrow money from you, or I owe you money for some reason, and so theoretically in halacha, not just theoretically, I'm allowed to pay you back with items of value rather than money. But that's annoying to people, because if I lend you money and all of a sudden I get back gold bars, so if I want to use those gold bars, I have to redeem them, I have to sell them, or, you know, keep them as an investment. But I didn't want that. I wanted the money back. So I can easily imagine, we can easily imagine that somebody would extract an oath from the other guy, or a promise, but it would turn into an oath to pay back with money. Now, the other piece of it is, that would be fine. That's just an oath to pay back with money. But the other piece of it was that the due date of this loan was the 7th of Nisan. So remember, this question is coming up, so maybe it was an actual... No, I'm sorry, you're talking about a Rush. This is the 7th of Nisan, so that's the promise. The promise is, I'll pay you back, the loan is due 7 Nisan, pay you back 7 Nisan, dafka with money. Man making the oath, and the person extracting the oath probably, did not remember that year, the 7th of Nisan was on Shabbat. So why is that a problem? It's a problem because there is a rabbinic prohibition of using money on Shabbat. If you think about the Torah and Malachot of Shabbat, the actual prohibitions of Shabbat, money is not included in that. So there's a muktzeh issue. There's all sorts of issues, but they're rabbinic issues of paying back with money. There's could be a divrei Kabbalah and the Nevi'im about Be'er Davar, about doing aso kavatzecha in tashivi Shabbat reglecha. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu that don't occur to me right now, but you could theoretically put it there, but it's mostly a derabbanan is the point. So the question is, the oath is a Torah law. The Torah law is that when a Jew makes an oath, he or she has to keep what they say. So The question becomes, does the oath take effect? Why would you think it doesn't take effect? You wouldn't think it doesn't take effect because you do have a principle that if somebody swears to violate the Torah, that doesn't take effect. Why wouldn't that take effect? That would not take effect because the phrase is, Mushba ve'omein mehar Sinai. Person is already took an oath at Sinai. The oath we all as Jews took at Sinai was to keep the Torah. So if I take another oath now to not keep the Torah, I can't do that because I already have an oath. And one oath, I can't take an oath to contradict a prior oath that it didn't. Now, by can't, we don't mean it's prohibited and you're a bad person if we do it. We mean it doesn't take effect. So the Rush says, in this case, the oath will take effect. Now, why will the oath take effect? It would seem like, doesn't it seem like, this man is taking an oath to violate at least a prohibition to Rabbanan. Now, we'll talk about it a little bit later in the second Tshuva, but an oath to violating a Rabbanan would seem, at least according to the Rambam, but seems according to many people, to also be somewhat of an oath to violate the Torah, because there's a prohibition called Lo Tasur. The Torah tells us we're not allowed to stray from what the rabbis tell us, from what Chazal tell us. So there's a prohibition of Lo Tasur. Am I not taking an oath to violate the Torah? Now, when the Rush wanted to justify his ruling that no, the oath takes effect, and this person is going to have an oath requiring him to pay back with money on the 7th of Nisan. Now, that doesn't mean that means we're okay with it, because then if he does that, he'll have violated the Rabbanan. He'll have satisfied the oath, but he'll violate the Rabbanan. What we mean by that is, you got to know that the oath took effect, man, and do something before the 7th of Nisan arrives that you not put yourself in that position. It would be similar to, and it will come up in this responsum, there are cases where a person can take a neder not to fulfill the Torah. And that has to do with the difference between nether and shavua. That nether occurs or happens to items, where shavua happens to the person. So if I say I'm not going to eat matzah on Pesach, if a person, God forbid, swears not to eat matzah on Pesach, the oath takes effect. That doesn't mean it's just fine that they don't eat matzah on Pesach. It means they have to do something about it, such as going to a chacham and getting a hatarat, getting the oath nullified or retracted or made to be realized that it was an oath made under mistaken premises, if it would have taken effect. But in the case of oath to eat, not eat matzah, basically doesn't take effect. But if a person says, all the matzah in the world should be prohibited to me, you know, we're going to see in the tshuva, it has to be bikolel. Bikolel means you can't directly say matzah for Pesach should be prohibited to me, because that does directly contradict a prior obligation. But if somebody just says matzah's asked to me, meaning you can imagine a person do it without even realizing, which we're going to talk about in a second, but let's suppose a person, you know, had a perm suit of 1 year, a person has tremendous amounts of matzah, and they get sick from it, they're disgusted by it. So the next day they say, oh, I want matzah to be prohibited to me like a korban, you know, for a year, you know, beyond next part. Doesn't, you know, so that, whether he remembers or not that Pesach is included, that is a neder that takes effect, because the neder can be chal on the matzah, not on the person, and then he has a problem. So again, it's not that he doesn't have to worry about it, it's just to get out of time. Here too, that's what the Rush is talking about. The person would have to pay back, the oath will take effect, and he's stuck in a position where, halachically, he's got to pay back this with money on the 7th of Nisan, and yet it's a Shabbos, and therefore he's going to be a problem, so he's going to have to do something about it. But the Rush, when he wants to justify and explain how he knows that the oath takes effect, he points to Yerushalmi, that you says that a Shavua can be Chal Bekolel Levatel Mitzvat Aseh. That you can, and the Yerushalmi holds, that what I just said about Shavua Neder is not a full distinction, that if somebody makes a Shavua Bekolel Levatel Mitzvat Aseh, so for example, he makes an oath never to eat matzah, he doesn't mention Pesach in particular, the Yerushalmi holds that that too will take place. Why will that take place? Because the oath takes effect by virtue of the non-Pesach matzah. I mean, the whole point was that you're not able to take an oath to violate the Torah because the person is already beholden to an oath to keep the Torah. Okay, so that means the oath has no place to take effect, but the Yerushalmi is pointing out to us, okay, but if the oath is really about a broader concept, and it happens to have as a detail to it a violation of the Torah, that will be able to take effect because there's room for the oath to take effect. So the man writing to Rav Moshe Feinstein says, I don't understand the comparison, meaning in the case of the Shavua, the man in writing, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, in the case of the oath not to eat matzah, that's an oath that will stop me from fulfilling the Torah. But an oath to violate the Torah, That is not chal bekolel. Meaning, let's suppose a person said, I'm going to eat that entire cow. Well, I take an oath to eat that entire cow. I think it would be an example. I hope it's an example. And you didn't mention the prohibited parts of the cow specifically. That oath doesn't take effect because that's an oath to violate the Torah. This is what the man is pointing out. Why is that important? Because the Rush's case is a case of taking an oath to violate the Torah because you're going to violate, now you're going to violate the Rabbanan, and we're going to get to that, but you're going to violate the Torah because you're going to use money on Shabbat. So how could it be, Yerushalmi's talking about, that you can have an oath that will take effect to stop us from fulfilling a mitzvah, but we have no evidence. We know that same idea will not work for an oath to violate the Torah. And the example the Rush was using was an example of violating the Torah, of promising to use money on Shabbat. Not only that, says the man writing Moshe Feinstein, why does the Rush throw in there that he didn't remember that it was the 7th of Nisan? Why does remembering affect the issue? If you're going to tell me the oath can take effect, it can take effect. If it can take effect, it can take effect. But that's a question of the technicalities of how oaths work, the man writing Moshe Feinstein assumes. So Moshe Feinstein's starting point is the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, if you think about it, is surprising. Tamua, right? But he starts off with some words that I feel in my absolutely minimal knowledge of Moshe Feinstein, I think these are characteristic words for him. He starts off by saying lefum riata. Lefum riata means at first glance. He says, pashut nani adati, it's clear to me. And I feel like Moshe Feinstein was very clear in his mind. The ideas that he had, some of which were creative, many of which were creative. I don't mean to say, many of which were creative and new and surprising and original. And that's part, I think, of why when other Torah scholars read Moshe Feinstein's writings, they were so impressed with them. Meaning, he knew a lot of Torah, but there are a lot of people who know a lot of Torah, not me. But there are many, you know, and not you, you know, not all of us, but I don't mean there are millions of people who know a lot of Torah. But in those ranks of people who are talking about these things, I am not convinced that Moshe Feinstein's bikiyut, his wide knowledge of Torah, was what impressed people. He knew what he knew extremely, extremely well, and that's an important qualification, but it's not one that I think set him head and shoulders above other people. I think it's creativity. And part of what I'm saying is that in that creativity, it's not just that he had a creative idea and then he liked it. I think that those ideas that came to him, the way he expresses them is that they came to him and they were clearly the truth as far as he could tell. Like, it just was pashut to him. And I think that's a very interesting characteristic of Moshe Feinstein. So he says, the Yerushalmi is a little strange because the Yerushalmi makes it sound like it's a question of finding a place for the nether, for the oath, for the promise to be chal. He says, well, but it's a strange because we have another idea of where an oath can be chal. In Gemara in Bavli, in Shavuot, on Daf Kaf Gimel, it talks about whether a Shavua can be chal the Kayem Isser. And we've said you can't have a Shavua to uproot an Isser, to promise to violate an Isser. But what happens if somebody takes an oath in some way? They say, I'm taking an oath not to eat non-kosher meat. And an oath not to eat horse. So that won't happen. That won't take effect. Why won't that take effect? Because I already have an oath not to eat horse from the Torah. The Torah told me not to eat horse. I took an oath at Sinai, and I can't eat horse. But the Gemara in Shavuot says that if a person says, so he says the reason why it's not challah, it's what kind of an Isser, is because ain't Isser challah Isser. We have a general principle that you can't have one Isser come into effect where there's already, now that this applies to separate Isserim as well, so here too, the prohibition to violate a Shavua can't take effect because there's another Isser in there. So too, if you have two prohibitions of the exact same level coming upon each other, meaning you have an item that was already prohibited for one reason, now you can add the exact same reason to that item, so that's called Ein Isser Chal Isser. Not the exact same Isser, but an Isser of the exact same level, exact same character, same scope, meaning exceptions to it that are not part of this tshuva, so I'm sorry that I'm getting to this, is that say, or this is relevant, if another Isser, what's called an Isser Kolel, comes to it, an Isser Kolel is an Isser that applies to a much broader category of things, then we say Isser Kol Isser. For example, you have non-kosher food, and then Yom Kippur happens. So any Isser Kol Isser would say, well, the fact that Yom Kippur comes along, that's a new Isser, but it's already prohibited. There's no reason why a new Isser should come along and affect it at all. But Yom Kippur can, I think Yom Kippur might be both an Isser Kol and Isser Mosif, so we'll talk about this some other time. But Yom Kippur can't because it's an Isser Kol, because Yom Kippur includes all foods being prohibited to the person. So once Yom Kippur includes all foods, then this food becomes prohibited as a Yom Kippur issue as well, which is important for things like, let's say, sadly, the person decides to eat the non-kosher food, he will have violated, or she will have violated, not only the non-kosher rule, but also Yom Kippur. Whereas Yisrael, any Yisrael Yisrael would tell me, if it's already prohibited, it can't become prohibited again, by the virtue of a new Isser, unless there's something that is new Isser that adds something to it. Whereas when it comes to an oath to be mevatel a mitzvah, to refrain from performing a mitzvah, like an oath to not eat matzah on Pesach, so there Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that that we don't say it's just because of a problem, it can't be chal, because you're already mushba from Har Sinai, because you're being mevatel a mitzvah, and that oath is all you're promising is to refrain. So there's a pasuk for that. There's a specific limud, which he doesn't present to us, and I forget it right now, but the specific pasuk for it. So if that's true, then Isser Kol shouldn't help you with that. Right? Meaning, if the Torah says, we're making an exception, this kind of oath isn't Kal, that's not the same thing. Ein Isser Kol Isser is a logical construction based on what people are already obligated to do or not obligated to do, what can be added, what cannot be added. But if it's a question of the Torah said, this kind of an oath doesn't take effect, then this kind of an oath doesn't affect. And therefore, the Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests that the Rush is really telling us that when you make a shavua bekolel, if you include many things in a shavua and you don't make a distinction among them, so then that gives us reason to believe that the intent of the shavua, the point of the shavua, wasn't levatel hamitzvah, wasn't to stop us from fulfilling the mitzvah. It's just an oath to not eat matzah. And once the person didn't intend to violate the Torah, meaning didn't intend to neglect the mitzvah, the shavua can be chal. Meaning the Rush's claim is, one idea for how you can have a shavua, an oath, come to apply to mitzvah issues is that it's kolel. It includes lots of things in it. That, however, only applies to prohibitions. It doesn't apply to an oath not to fulfill a mitzvah, because there's a special limud that tells us, special miyot that tells us that that's not true of oaths. You can't take an oath levatel the mitzvah no matter what, even if you're kolel it. So what the Rush was saying, according to Moshe Feinstein's reading, is it's not that kolel helps you with that. It's what kolel helps you with is to show the intent of the oath. And if the intent of the oath is not to force myself to refrain from keeping a mitzvah, then that oath can take effect. Now, why then he says, and by the way, the svar the other way of why can't it be true that, so if that's your point, that it doesn't count as an oath to violate the Torah when you include a lot of things in it, then why not have kolel do that for levar al lotase? Meaning, let's say I say somebody takes an oath to eat the entire cow. We say even if it's kolel, even if you didn't mention the prohibited parts of the cow, it still doesn't take effect. Why not? If the whole reasoning is that once it's not categorized as an oath to be mevatel a mitzvah, to stop us from keeping a mitzvah, or to violate a prohibition here too. Say the oath isn't coming to violate the prohibition, the oath is coming to eat the whole cow. So why is that different? So the Ramban in the Milchomo suggested that when it comes to me having to the person having to actively violate the Torah, to perform an action to violate the Torah in order to fulfill the oath, so the Torah doesn't want that. Meaning, and the Torah doesn't want us to be allowed to do that, and therefore the Torah will stop the Shavua from being Chal, will stop the oath from taking effect. Meaning, when somebody takes an oath about matzah in general, and that includes not eating matzah on Pesach, so there's nothing that the person's going to do that the Torah could say, no, stop doing that. We can't let you do that. We're never going to let you do that. And therefore, the oath won't take effect. But the Ramban is saying that's true of prohibitions. That when the Torah says, don't eat the certain fats of a cow, or don't eat the blood of a cow, for you, is a better example. When the Torah says, don't eat the blood of a cow, and a person takes an oath to eat all the cow, which includes blood, but he doesn't say that out loud, so why not say, it's not an oath? That's not an oath to violate the Torah. So the Ramban's idea was, it's not intentionally enough to violate the Torah, and therefore the idea that you already have an oath from Har Sinai might not be enough to stop the oath from taking effect, but the oath will eventually necessarily lead to this person actively violating the Torah, right? And that's not possible. The Torah, when it prohibited, said, and we're not going to let you find ways to do this. And therefore, the oath never takes effect. Whereas opposed to a shvua levatal mitzvah, an oath to refrain from fulfilling a mitzvah, that logic wouldn't have applied because the person never actually doing it in the Torah could say, well, you can't do that because there was a not doing. So there you have a special limud to tell us that you have a special inference to tell us that it doesn't take effect, levatal hamitzvah. And that inference doesn't help in kolel, according to the Rosh, because for shavua, bikolel, shavua includes lots of things, including the refraining from the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Since the oath isn't defined as an oath to neglect the mitzvah, it can take effect. Once it can take effect, he's going to have a problem. So why is that helpful to us? Because the Rosh's insight, according to the Rav Moshe Feinstein's reading of it, the Rosh's insight is that when I categorize an oath, there are times that it can take effect even if it has eventually a negative, an unfortunate ramification. If I categorize an oath to refrain from performing a mitzvah, that can't take effect. That's a special limud in the Gemara that it can't take effect. There's a special inference from the Torah that it cannot take effect. But the Rosh's Kiddush was, based on that Yerushalmi, if I can categorize an oath, it's just an oath, one of whose outcomes will be that I can't fulfill a mitzvah, that does take effect. It's not good, and the person should find a way out of it before the mitzvah comes around, but it shows it can take effect. And it teaches this idea that we categorize oaths. And now come back to our guy who took an oath to pay back with money on the 7th of Nisan. Is that an oath to violate the Torah or not? Well, this year, since 7th of Nisan is Shabbat, if I knew that at the time and I intend to do it anyway, that would be an oath clearly to violate the Torah. I plan to pay you back. It would be like saying, I plan to pay you back with money on Shabbat. That's an oath to violate the Torah. But if at the time that I took the oath, that the person who borrowed the money took the oath or owed the money, took the oath, did not remember the 7th of Nisan was Shabbat, the Rosh is saying that he didn't remember. Therefore, it's not an oath to violate the Torah. And therefore, the oath takes effect. Now, the other piece of it is, the other surprising piece or interesting piece of it is that if you have remembered that it was Shabbat, the Rosh thinks it wouldn't have taken effect. That's interesting because the prohibition of paying with money on Shabbat is Dirabbanan. And you might have thought to yourself, well, why wouldn't the oath de Oraita override the requirement to Rabbanan? And why not just say the whole idea that you can't take an oath to violate the Torah only applies to biblical law? And why would you say that? Because the whole reason we gave for why you can't take such oaths was because you're a mushba me'on me'har Sinai, because you already took an oath at Har Sinai. But this person did take an oath on Har Sinai for this because it didn't exist yet. But the Maharal Bach, Rav Levi bin Chaviv, pointed out that now we think, this is based on a Rambam, it's all discussion, but we think that lo tasur and a Gemara, that the prohibition of not straying from what the rabbis told us is a Torah requirement, and that makes all of these issues, including any legislation that the rabbis give, as being like it's part of the Torah, and therefore a shavua can't be chal, an oath can't be chal on that as well. But if not for that idea, we would have thought that it would take effect. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, that doesn't mean you would have been allowed to do it, because there are times when we say that Chazal have the ability to make their rules be stronger than prohibitions in the Torah. So it's not like you've been okay to pay the money. You would say, well, it's only the Rabbanan endeavor. So he says, no, you would have been stuck, because Chazal would be telling you you can't pay with money. You'd have an oath that you need to pay with money, and you'd have to find ways around that or ways to get rid of that oath. There's a bit more to that response, but I want to get to the one that's really for the 10th of Iyar, which is the next one in the book, and is after a letter in between, where the man with whom he's corresponding asked the question, and he says, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, Kasher iyanti ra'iti shelo ta'iti. He says, I looked more carefully, and I realized I didn't make a mistake, which I always think is funny, because you usually tend to think you don't make mistakes, and later on the Juvi does say about this other thing that's not important to us, he says, on that I did actually make a mistake, but it doesn't ruin my idea. So there's a strong back and forth here, and he's clearly not yet the overpowering Torah authority that he later becomes, at least not his correspondence with this guy. So he says, and it happens to me, I just heard a shiur from Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig, or Michal Rosenzweig, about this very issue, about Lo Tasur, where he said a very similar idea. So I don't know if he knows it, Moshe Feinstein, someone anticipated. He said, you have to say that Lo Tasur, the prohibition of the Torah, is not a prohibition al pirtei hadvarim she'asru, about every specific idea that Chazal created, every specific law is itself a violation of lotus. So that's a whole discussion there is in the halak literature about what we mean when we say that every derabbanan is a violation of lotus. So one possibility is that lotasur really means that every time Chazal makes some kind of legislation, that's a new example of lotasur, and it's all and it becomes itself an item of lotasur. So Rosh Hashanah says, no, it's not about that, he thinks. It's not about the specific details. It's a prohibition on the person not to stray from Dvareha, from the way the Torah expresses itself. Sorry, I said that wrong. It's a prohibition on the person against violating what they say, meaning the prohibition is don't violate what Rabbanan tell you. Then every time Rabbanan create a legislation or an ordinance or a takana, right? Every time they do that, it falls in the rubric of lo tasur, meaning it expands the Jew's personal obligation to follow Chazal. But it's not like there's a lo tasur for, you know, cheese made by non-Jews, the example of Moshe Feinstein, and there's a lotasur for paying money on Shabbat, and there's a lotasur for lighting Hanukkah candles, and there's a lotasur. Now, there's a separate lotasur. There's a lotasur. Lotasur says the Jew must follow what Chazal tell the Jew to follow. And then there are lots and lots of examples. If that's true, says Moshe Feinstein, you could distinguish between an aseh and a lo taaseh. Because if I swear to do something, if a Jew swears to do something that Chazal told them not to do, that's an oath now to violate what they said. And once the Jew is taking an oath to violate what they said, that's like taking an oath to violate lo tasur. He's taking an oath, or she's taking an oath to violate the Torah. But if Chazal said to do something actively, to light Hanukkah candles, and this person takes an oath never to light candles, right? He has a bad fire in his house, and he gets spooked by it. He takes an oath, I'm never lighting candles again. So that oath, we're now coming to the question of that Ramban that we saw before. If he's taking an oath like that, and there is a Torah prohibition against lighting candles, would Chazal intend for their ordinance of lighting Hanukkah candles to apply to this Jew? So Rosh Feinstein sort of thinks that maybe they wouldn't. Maybe we would say that Chazal would say, we don't want you to transgress a Shavua, and therefore we won't have the obligation of Hanukkah candles apply to you, and you won't be over on Lo Tosor. He says, similar to the idea that we say that if somebody takes an oath not to sit in a sukkah, they don't take an oath, they take a neder, they make a neder that all sukkahs in the world should be prohibited to them, all the year, all the time. So, and you can easily imagine it would be, let's say, you know, somebody is in a sukkah, not on sukkahs, they're in a hut of sorts, right? And they get bitten by, this is the example that came to my mind because I'm a weird person, they get bitten by an insect that causes them a lot of pain and maybe even life-threatening illness, but they recover, and they say, that's it. You know, I want all non-permanent structures to be prohibited to me because I don't want to risk that again. Then later they realize, oh, sukkah, I forgot about sukkah. What do you do? So that neder takes effect. Why does that neder take effect? Because the neder takes effect because he didn't take a neder not to keep the mitzvah of sukkah. He took a neder that all these things are prohibited to him and has a place to be chal. And then we're not going to say to the person, oh, you have to sit in the sukkah anyway because we don't force people to violate the Torah. And this guy's stuck, unable to fulfill the mitzvah unless he finds a way out of that neder. So Moshe Feinstein's point is he thinks that would be true if the person took an oath without realizing it, which included the requirement not to fulfill the Rabbanan. So there, lo tosser wouldn't take effect on the person because Chazal wouldn't be trying to force a person to violate a prohibition. L'chein ala sey de Rabbanan chala af below kovel. He thinks an oath that would affect not keeping a derabanan, even if it's not kolel, he thinks it would take effect because it's taking effect before the thing happens, and Chazal maybe wouldn't put in their lotusser on that, but on a lotus, it's not going to call at all because that would be a promise to actively violate the Torah. And you can't say Chazal would stop him, would remove their prohibition. The prohibition already exists, meaning the mitzvah doesn't come along until it comes along, and you can say, well, Chazal will do him the favor of not having it come along if he's already taken an oath not to do it, and therefore it would be chal. But if it's a prohibition, it wouldn't be chal that way. It would be kolel. According to the Rush, it's going to be chal, it's going to take effect because it wasn't the intent of the oath to violate that. And therefore, the truth is, it's not even in that sense a violation of lotasur because it's not his intent to violate the Rabban. Now that gets complicated. You can't say, so therefore it's okay, because it's still in effect violating them, but that wasn't the intent there, and therefore the lotasur aspect of it is more complicated. Now I am as is my custom, running out of time, and there's a bit more in the tshuva here, so I want to just take one more, and not a lot more. We've gotten the main outlines of Ramosha Feinstein's discussion, which reminds us of issues like what Isuri Derabanan are about and how they work, and about Isur Kolel and about oaths and how we can or cannot change our halakhic responsibilities, what it means to take an oath not to keep a mitzvah, how intent can affect all of that. So we've done a lot of that stuff, and I think in a productive way. Then I just want one last of the issues that I can bring up is the man writing to Ramosha Feinstein asked a question about the Ran. The Ran had written to explain a Ramban that, let's say somebody took an oath to actively violate the Torah, but it's a prohibition in the Torah that's not actually meforash batorah, that it wasn't said explicitly in the Torah. So, for the example, the Ramban's example is nishba lahara le'atzmo. Let's say a person takes an oath to damage themselves. So we have inferences from the Torah that tell us that we're not allowed to hurt ourselves. And so Rav Moshe Feinstein says you have to say that that's the halacha is just well accepted that way, and part of the reason he gives is that a davar sheino miforash is an iser kalush. It's a weaker prohibition, and especially Rosh Hashanah, it has to be the kind of prohibition that doesn't have any punishment by Torah law. Anything that has punishment by Torah law, I can't get into the examples because I have already gone over my time, but let me just finish this idea. Anything that has punishment, Rosh Hashanah thinks, for all that it might not be explicit in the Torah, since it's strong enough to be punished on its basis, so that's going to count as a full prohibition and the Shavuot won't be chal. But if it's an idea that comes out of the Torah that creates a prohibition, but not one with any punishment teeth to it, so we're not going to hold that is a full enough prohibition to get in the way, to say you're already a mushba vomid Har Sinai, you've already been taken an oath from Har Sinai, such that an oath cannot be chal. In those cases, an oath will be chal. So some ideas about where oaths can and cannot be chal by Rav Moshe Feinstein for the 10th of Iyar, reminding us of all sorts of complications and technicalities when people try to create their own Torah, as it were, and their own rules for themselves, complications of how that does or doesn't clash with rules that already exist, and where the Torah leaves room for us to do so, or it doesn't room to do so, and a little bit about our relationship to Derabanan, to rules that Chazal made for us. My name is Gideon Rothstein. Rabbi Jacob Ramatim and Hachas, no, you are instrumental in bringing these shurim to you, so we thank them. This has been a responsible day for the 10th of Iyar. Have a great day.